Hey, I'm Andy from the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Our show is pretty simple. Five lifelong friends competing on a single topic to see who gets bragging rights. Each episode, Nick, Scott, Brian, Kelly, and I battle through 10 questions on movies, music, science, history, sports, whatever we decide to throw in the blender for that week. Every episode stands on its own, so you can jump in wherever your curiosity takes you. And we don't just stop at right or wrong. We get into the backstory, the origins, the weird facts, and the stuff that has you saying, "How did I not know that already?" So download an episode, play along, keep score, and tell us how you do. See if you can beat the crew on the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
You know, the Super Bowl is a Super Bowl, but right. Then there's the commercials in the Super Bowl. And I realized, oh my God, I think I kind of done something special here. I feel so proud. I feel so American being part of the culture.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, here we go. Back again, you and I, another episode of Story and Craft. So good to have you. If this is your first episode, welcome. Glad to have you as well. Today, sitting down, having a fun, lively conversation, or actually, it's a fun conversation with a very lively, cool guest, Danai Garcia. She was in the show Prison Break, also spent a number of years on Fear the Walking Dead. The new show, MIA, on NBC and Peacock. It was a great conversation, talked about her history, her heritage coming from Cuba. Had a great time talking with Danai. I think you'll enjoy this as well. Hey, don't forget to make sure to grab your phone or whatever device you're listening on. Make sure to like Story and Craft, follow the show, because that way you'll get notified every time a new episode comes out. It also helps people to find Story and Craft, which I appreciate greatly. You can also go to storyandcraftpod.com. Everything you want to know about the show, it is right there. Also, Substack, just go to storyandcraft.substack.com. Okay, so let's get after it. Today is Danai Garcia Day, right here on Story and Craft. So am I saying your name right? It's Danai, correct?
It's Danai.
Danai. Okay, it's good, good,
like,
good.
Don't deny it.
I'm not going to, I promise. So where are you joining me from today?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Well, you're just a little bit north of me. I'm down on South Padre, so we're not that far.
Oh, so we're in Texas, same state.
Yeah, we're not that far from each other. Yeah. But I see you're originally from Cuba, correct?
That is right. I'm from Havana. Yes.
Wow, from Havana to Austin. I got to know, are there a lot of similarities? Are there things you see in Austin that remind you at all of Cuba, or is it totally different?
Well, the weather is pretty straightforward, right? It's hot.
Humid, yeah.
Very humid. We don't have the oceans, but we have beautiful rivers in Austin. So it's a good combination. South Padre Island, I remember everybody was like, if you want the beach, go to South Padre Island. Mm-hmm. That's the closest to Cuba I think there is. I think you're closer to Cuba than me in terms of experience.
Well, perhaps, yeah, you know, it's funny enough, being from Dallas originally, where I grew up, it could get ironically more humid there than it can get down here sometimes, which is just odd. But you get that really oppressive heat in Dallas. And, you know, where it's like 100 degrees is no big deal. I'm like, down here, if it gets really far above 90, it's a rarity, you know.
You know, I did a show called Prison Break, and we shot it in Dallas.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It was so hot. And I remember thinking, why does it feel hotter than in Cuba here? And the reason, and then I figured it out, and I think that's what you're experiencing.
I think it's all the concrete.
You have an ocean.
Oh, you have an ocean.
And the ocean has breeze. Like, you can't, like, it's just, it cools you down. Like, and in Dallas, it's just not, you're not close to any massive water.
I think it's the largest landlocked city in America.
That sounds a lot.
They got creeks. That's about it. Yeah. No, there's some lakes there. You know, people go do the lake thing, but
they're not big enough to cool you down. They're not. Yeah. They're not like, you know, like in Austin, we have the Colorado River.
Oh, that's
runs
right.
Through the downtown. And, you know, there's still some, if you sit by the river, it's not as intense like when you're like in the middle of flat desert, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny. I did a little bit of, I don't like to do a lot of research because I like just to sit down and have a conversation. But I did run across something that you know, I always end up talking food at least once on every episode. And I noticed you do, like, you're a foodie. You're a kind of a cooking sort of maven. We'll touch on that most certainly. But I got to know, Austin, have you ever been to Franklin Barbecue by any chance?
Of course.
Okay. I have to live like you're... You know, I've tried to go there a few times, and it's either the line was crazy or it was COVID and yes. You know, they did the thing where you had to order ahead, and I'm like, oh, you know, so
it's no, you can't do that. No, you have to live the moment. Like, yeah. Eating during COVID was a nightmare for me. Like, it's just the whole experience of eating just goes away by the amount of preparation before you eat is just too much.
Well, there's a place here on the island that they still have it. They've got a vestige of the COVID times. They still have one of those like little scanners you go and you like look at, and then it scans you and it gets your temperature or whatever. They never took it out of the entranceway. So every time I go there, I always take my temperature just for fun now.
You don't know what your temperature is.
I'm like a little kid. I'm like, what's my temperature now?
Before I eat, I need to know what's my temperature. That's funny.
I should be doing it on the way out, especially if it's spicy. You know? but how long have you lived in Austin?
I've been here since I did a show called Fear the Walking Dead.
Right.
And Fear the Walking Dead, we did two seasons in Baja in Ensenada.
Oh,
and then
we
moved to Austin in 2018. So I got a good taste of Austin before COVID, which was, but you know, working, it's like, you don't get to really explore the city.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the apocalypse, it's like so intense. You just don't. But then in 2020, that's when I relocated for good. Cause the whole traveling during COVID while being in production was so complex. And I just never wanted to get sick because I don't want to stop production.
I know. It was when I started the show, it was right around COVID. And there was a few times when I'd be talking with somebody and they would have to go do their COVID test before they go on set. And then there was one guy I was speaking with, they sent somebody to his house to swab his nose. And then, you know.
So I decided to stay here, like in Austin. Yeah.
So they shot Fear the Walking Dead in Austin? They moved the production there?
Yeah, from Ensenada. So we shot season two and three in Ensenada. And then we moved to Austin. And we did season 4, 5, 6, and 7. And six. And then seventh, we did it in Savannah, Georgia.
That's cool that they
brought it. It's another kind of hot. Savannah.
Oh, yeah. I used to live in San Diego, and everybody would talk about going down to Ensenada and getting the lobster tails. That was, you know, of course, we're back to food again, but I never made my way down there. But everybody said the seafood was amazing. You know, I only saw the first season, and there's so much stuff out there I got to keep track of and watch for fun and for, you know, doing this. But it was an interesting spin on the original. Was the premise for me, a guy that I didn't go beyond season one, but that they was the idea that you're moving, was it the same core cast every season, or was it kind of okay,
we started with the family actually the first season they shot it in Canada and was pretend to be Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then the family that starts in the apocalypse, they go to Baja, literally escaping the U.S. Like, they cross the border in a boat.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
And that takes us to season two, which they land in my colonia, Luciana. And then that same core family keeps going and going. And we lose a couple of characters, but then we reunite at the end. So it's basically the same core family that we follow for years.
Yeah, I remember the first season, they were like, weren't they in a hotel? Wasn't that kind of where they started off as their kind of the home base at first? And there was, I know a yacht was involved. I got to go back and watch.
There was Rosarito Beach and Hotel. That was season two. That was really when the apocalypse was hitting. Because the first season was more like seeing the world collapse.
Right.
Like in The Walking Dead, you know, the main character goes into a coma. And when he wakes up, that's the apocalypse. But in our show, the prequel, we actually get to see how the world really starts crumbling. And these people are like dealing with that. So, yeah. That's the difference. Yeah,
it's one of those shows. I don't know why I stopped watching it. I enjoyed the original show, but I think there was a certain fatigue after a while of just kind of, because it's heavy, you know, it's a lot of,
very intense.
Yeah. So before Fear the Walking Dead, like when you were first approached on that, I'm assuming you already knew about it, The Walking Dead. That was something that was already on your radar.
Yeah.
So how did that come together for you?
Well, you know, I auditioned and I was like you, I watched The Walking Dead, but when the prequel started, it was very new that I haven't been able to see it, like as it was coming out. So when I auditioned for it, I looked at the first few episodes and I realized that, you know, in The Walking Dead, the number one was Rick Grimes and he was a male. But in Fear the Walking Dead, our number one was a woman. So it was basically polar opposites, like in ways to approach this entire world. And women in the apocalypse, in this universe, they're really badass. So I knew I was going in for a treat in all kinds of way. So I really got excited and I just went and I put my heart on the audition process. And when I got it, I was literally put on a train from LA to San Diego. That beautiful train ride.
It runs right along the beach.
Right on it's so beautiful. I'll never forget that first ride, getting ready for Fear, reading my script. And then I crossed the border and the next day I was in the apocalypse in Mexico. And it was one of the most, I felt like I was living just such a precious world where it was so dark and beautiful at the same time. And it was just, it was a great transition in my life. Yes.
Yeah. That's what a great place to shoot it though. Yeah. That's,
Oh gosh. Yes. Yes.
Beautiful.
We shot in Baja Fox Studios. That's where they shot Titanic. Uh-huh. So we were in the lot of this insane infinity pool that they built with the huge rig where they put the Titanic like sinking. And it was right off in front of the ocean. And imagine you're having lunch where they show Titanic, X-Men, and all these iconic, movies.
Cool. I didn't even know that was there. I didn't know they had a filming location in Baja.
Yeah, the Baja Studios, that's where they shot Titanic. And it was where they shot the infinity pool. Like you can see the ocean and the water and, you know, there was a pool. And it just, you could not see that there was like a little... You can see, I mean, it was incredible how they did it. It was amazing.
Well, I'm curious, going back, where did you originally, when you came from Cuba, how long ago was that that you came over here?
I came in 2003.
Okay.
I came in 2003 and, I started basically modeling and doing commercials. I studied dance in Cuba. So I go back to like ballet and flamenco and all this. Like, I feel like if you come from an island like Cuba, it's like you dance is inevitable in your life. It's like either you play baseball or you sing or you dance or you play dominoes. It's like it's part of living. It's part of like growing up. And so then I ended up doing theater in Havana. And then when I came to the U.S., I just went to commercials and I just started like, that I got my SAG Screen Actors Guild card doing a Old Navy commercial. I never forget for this winter. So we really start like doing Old Navy commercials and all this. And then little by little, I got a movie and then I got another film. My first film was with Marisa Tomei. It was a movie called Danica. Mm-hmm. And it was just an incredible experience. But my base was theater in Havana.
Well, where did you first? Where did you first arrive when you got here? Where was your initial
Los
destination?
Angeles.
Oh, Los Angeles. Oh, so you went right. Yeah. You went right to where it was happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and it was it was a long process starting out, but it was, coming from ballet and dance, that art takes time, and before you do, you get to do anything good. It takes time. So the patience, which is something that people get. Really hang on to like, I'm not making it. It's like, it was an easy transition. And also the language was another barrier that I had to really perfect and overcome and be present, speaking in English, whether it was acting or not acting. It was a learning curve. But it's
so did
so
you
special.
Start? So were you had you studied English when you were in Cuba before you came over? Or did you kind of start the whole learning process when you got here?
Well, you start, I mean, when you're in a country that English is not a language, like it's not the first language, you think you're not English. You think you're not. You're like, oh, I can talk and I can, you know, communicate. But then you come to the country where English is like 24 hours, then you realize how much you have to catch up. So I understood the basics. I knew how to communicate, but when it comes to like daily life and, you know, not turning off the language was like, that was a challenge. And it took practice. It took time. It took years.
That's a lot to dive into. You know, you're in not only a new country. Yeah. Well, what was it? I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, was it difficult leaving logistically from Cuba, or was that, you know, because I always envision it like people that want to come from Cuba, they just obviously just don't envision them being able to jump on a plane like, I'm going to move to the U.S. now, you know. So was it difficult or was it more like, you know, just leaving what you knew was the hard part?
Yeah, I think readjusting my entire life in an unknown world was the hardest part, because this is where I, you know, I came and understanding the culture, the language, finding my place here, finding where I belong, and it was the journey that transformed me the most, to the person I am, and learning the nuance of this business and understand where I should serve and where I should grow and where I should study and the weakness and strength and all that stuff is really where the growth really started for me in life. It was not so much of like leaving what I already know. It's like understanding where I am and where I'm going. I think that's kind of the life of an immigrant, a little bit of really understanding where is the place for you to serve and to be of service in an unknown.
So when you came over, were you looking at it as, you know, you had a clear goal, like, listen, I'm going to do this thing. You know, you came from dance, you came from a theater background. And so did you come going, man, I want to do the movie thing? Or were you thinking, I want to do theater when I get to the U.S.?
It was interesting. I never had a clear idea of what I wanted. I actually joined Debbie Allen Dance Academy when I first came, and I would take ballet classes just to feel grounded, because it's something I understood, dance. So I would go in the mornings and take dance classes and feel like, oh, I understand this world. Like, it's French, you know? So yeah. it was a world that I understood. But I was more, you can't, at that stage when you come to a new world, you can't decide where to go because everything is new. You just try to find your own place as time goes. So I joined Ivana Chubbuck Studios. So I would take scene studies there and classes. So I was finding my place I was just looking for where I belong. I did not have a specific idea of what I wanted.
So did you come over with family or were you just kind of solo? You just came on over and jumped right in?
Well, my brother was here and I was reunited with them, my ex-partner. So we were very little and just my brother was really the only family I had here. And that was enough, you know. Sometimes you feel like, oh my God, I was not even expecting to have friends. It was more like,
it's nice you have a home. You had a foundation when you landed. You were like,
exactly.
You had a place to jump off from.
Exactly.
Steven, we need to tell people about Nice Games Club, our game development podcast.
Okay.
You know, the one where we talk programming and design, but also how games fit in our culture?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Mark, what else can we say?
How about how we
have more than 400 episodes in the archives? We've interviewed folks behind Monkey Island,
Baba Is You,
Opus Magnum,
and more.
If you say so.
But you two also make games, right?
Speak for yourself, Lydia, but also yes.
So we don't just talk about the industry, we also talk about the games we're making.
Yep,
that's it.
Nice Games Club. Listen at nicegames.club or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kind of what was that first big project, that first thing, you know, besides Old Navy, of course, but what was the first, what was the thing that landed for you? Like, okay, this, I'm in it. I'm doing the thing right now. What was that for you?
You know, I did a Super Bowl commercial and it did actually 5 Super Bowl commercials with Snoop Dogg. And I'll never forget.
Really?
It was for the Nokia.
Oh, yeah.
So the the phone. And I did not grow up with American football. So I had no idea what I was doing in terms of commercials. I thought it was one more commercial to do. Mm-hmm. There were five, and the director was Guy Ritchie.
Really?
Which was very wonderful. Yes. And Snoop Dogg comes. And at the time we had Johnny Cochran. He was the attorney for O.J. Simpson.
Oh, Johnny Cochran. Yeah. Wow. Are you going back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was just such a, like, characters would come up and I had no idea because, you know, it was one of my first jobs here. I had no idea the Super Bowl, it was so American, such an American culture. Like that day is the day of the year. And I remember I did it. It was 2 weeks of shooting. The most incredible characters would show up. And I remember when it came up on TV, you know, the Super Bowl is a Super Bowl, but right. Then there's the commercials in the Super Bowl. And I realized, oh my God, I think I kind of done something special here. So it was, I felt so proud. I felt so American being part of the culture and being part of the commercials of the Super Bowl. That was my first like, whoa, this is cool.
Definitely levels up from Old Navy. So you went from starting to top of the commercial heap. Now going back, like what did your parents do? What kind of, what was their vocation and experience back in Cuba?
Well, my mom is, she's a teacher. I come from, which really helped a lot growing up, you know, have a very structured home. I have two older brothers. We were three in total. I'm the youngest. And my dad is a professional bartender. He actually worked in this little bar where Ernest Hemingway used to have his mojitos.
Oh, yeah. No. I know that. It's actually got an American name, right? It's the bar itself.
La Bodeguita.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
no,
La
no.
Bodeguita del Medio is where he would drink his mojitos. And El Floridita, that's where he would drink his daiquiris.
Daiquiris. That's the one.
Yeah. El Floridita. So my dad worked as a professional bartender in this just iconic place in Havana. And he actually traveled opening this kind of bar in Mexico, Spain. So
really?
It's because,
wow. That's, yeah. You know, it's funny. I know about that because I was a big, you know, Anthony Bourdain fan. And I know when he went to Cuba, he went to that bar and it's like, and the daiquiri that the way people think you're like frozen daiquiri, it's different than the daiquiri down there.
It's so different there. Yeah, it's so different. And the mojito is also different. Mm-hmm. Here they put mint. Over there they put yerba buena, which is a kind of leaf that doesn't grow here because it's not
really
enough. Or
no,
yeah,
I thought it was mint. My world has just been rocked.
No,
wait.
No, it's not mint.
Oh.
I mean, Hemingway loved it with yerba buena. Let's put it that way. I mean, but it's that's
yerba
how they
buena.
Make mojitos.
Is that like a yerba mate kind of a related tea?
It's
vibe?
Kind of like an herb similar to mint. It has but it has like an earthy taste to it too. It's not as minty as mint.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm. I know, right? So I come. So these are my two. So it was a very unique place. My dad would travel. Friends will come over.
Well, bartenders, they're on a stage as well, you know. So there's kind of a, I don't call it a performance, but there maybe it is. Maybe it is performance.
I think a little bit. I mean, they come, you give them a good time, and you talk, and then they go, and they, you know, apart from the drink, it's an experience. And you know, I feel like Cuba has so much history, and the fact that it's like, you know, still is preserving the 1950s style.
Yes, yeah.
Like you go to places and you see pictures of Frank Sinatra, Hemingway. That's where he wrote the Old Man and the Sea novels. And you go to places and you can feel that vibe everywhere. And then you put the drinks on top of it, and then the heat, and then the water. It's like, it's really truly magical.
That was where Americans went. I mean, that predated like Las Vegas and all that. And I think
that
you
was
know,
Las Vegas in the Caribbean. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it was leveled up as almost kind of like a French Riviera-ish kind of a vibe back in the day. And
totally.
There was a really good movie I saw a long time ago. It's with, it probably came out in the I don't know, maybe late 60s with Sean Connery. God, I forgot what that was. I forgot the name of it, but it was that snapshot of time when things changed, you know, and the preservation of the cars there. I mean, the kind of money those people could fetch for those cars in the U.S., it would just be astronomical. But it's just there's a resilience, and there is a kind of a just figure it out vibe of the people there, which is just, you know, it's a place I've always wanted to go. I think friends of mine who live in Canada, they go regularly. So.
Oh, yes. We have a lot of Canadian tourism and European too, for sure.
So yes. What did your folks think about you coming? Were they encouraging it? Were they like, I don't know about going, you're in Los Angeles?
My parents are always very supportive of what I do. And that is something that really has helped me grow as a human. Like I, you know, every time good changes come with like a scary feelings, right? Like it's you, because you don't know until you know. And the unknown part of living is what really scares you. And having parents that they understand that I am in the unknown and they're in the unknown as parents and still have the courage to say, it's worth it. And it's you have to try it. And it's how we raise you. And it's who we are. It's something that really I carry with me, like starting new projects that are so scary. You know, when you start new characters, when you go to auditions, like I feel like life is full of this scary unknowns places that it takes you.
Well, the only constant in life is change. So it's kind of when you embrace it and you ride it kind of like a surfer riding a wave, you may fall down every now and then, you know, but.
Oh, yeah.
But that's so funny. You said that thing about parents. It's like you're in the unknown. That's one of the things kids don't know. It's like you got somebody that's doing on-the-job training while they're raising you, you know, that kind of a thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So how long did you live in Los Angeles?
I lived in LA for 16 years.
Oh, so you're there for a while. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, it was interesting because I lived there for 16 years because I had my place there, but I was always traveling. Like Fear the Walking Dead took 6-7 months out of my life overseas in Mexico, but I would always go back to LA. So if we really look at it from like, okay, when did you full-time move? Like your home became where you came to. Yes. 16 years.
Now officially a Texan, you probably, and I got my little can of water here from HEB. So you probably do your HEB shopping.
Love HEB. We have Trader Joe's here.
That's right. You do have Trader Joe's. That's right. Because you got a little bit of that LA vibe hanging out there. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the, and people in Texas will know, the tortillas you get at HEB, which are, solid.
Very fresh.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I love about coming back down here, because I lived in New Orleans for 20 years being a Dallas kid, but I was down there. My youngest graduated high school, hit the ejection seat on New Orleans, decided where do I want to go? You know, LA back to Southern California, back home to Dallas where I'm from. I was like, you know what? I grew up coming to this place. And I call it my tropical Mayberry. It's like 3,000 full-time residents, but you know, Austin is kind of where a lot of the people down here in the Valley like to drive up to, that in San Antonio, or kind of like they do their little excursions up there. I have yet to do so since I've been here.
You have to.
Absolutely. Great. Here I am right about lunchtime talking about tortillas, and this always happens. I always record. I always, anybody listening to the show knows, I always record right around lunch, it seems like, and I'm always hungry, you know, and so, but you do a cooking thing, a web video, like you do, are the cooking lessons, or are you just exploring food, or kind of what are you doing on your program?
It's called Cooking with La Familia. So basically COVID hit, I never forget, we were shooting Fear the Walking Dead, which is already an apocalypse with dealing with virus, right? So the producers come and they said, you gotta go home. There's a virus and it's a pandemic. And we thought it was a joke because I'm like, we've been killing zombies for like a few years. We're like, what? And they're like, no, this is very serious and we have to stop production. Everybody go home until further notice. And we thought it was gonna take a week. We thought it was gonna take 2 weeks, a month at the most. Here we are 2 months in. And I don't know what to do with my life. I feel like, I don't know, we're imitating life and life is imitating art, because we've been like literally living in this high stakes in the show, but now we're living that in our real life. So I decided to do this thing called karaoke and chats. And I would literally go on live Instagram and I would sing Spanish songs like salsa. And then I would do a chat about how to handle this hard time. Like, let's keep our beds, you know, let's keep our homes clean. Just basically like something positive. And then I will end it with singing karaoke. And then after that, we kept prolonging our break. You know, the pandemic kept going. And then I decided to be like, who would like to cook? And then everybody kept saying, yes, let's go, let's do it. And I just started cooking Cuban food. I just would do a live on Instagram and I taught everybody how to make arroz con pollo, tostones, which are plantains.
Oh, yeah.
Black beans, Cuban black beans. I mean, I even made them a mojito with hierbabuena because I couldn't find it.
Oh, okay.
So I would make like dishes and everybody would be cooking with me live. And then they would send pictures of their, I taught them how to make flan, like, you know, the Cuban flan.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole deal, I will be live. Like, you know, you put the flan in the oven.
You put it live. You didn't pre-record it and put it out there. You're just, yeah. Okay.
No. It was live. And then I would take that footage and I would put it on my YouTube. And I started cooking with La Familia because everybody was en familia. So that's what you do.
Yeah, no, I remember. Yeah, that was so funny. You brought back that memory of, like they said, you know, it was always like, oh, this is only going to last so long. And it was always this kind of
odd story, you know. Going.
Yeah, just I vividly remember I was in LA 2019 and it was right around Christmas time, I think. And that's when people first started talking about plane travel. Other part, there's this thing going on. I'm like, okay. And next thing you know, we're washing our groceries. But
so that's how cooking was born.
You embraced that as kind of a way to stay connected and in a way,
yes.
You
feel
kind of, you know, are you kind of person who has to kind of be in motion? Do you find that about yourself? Or you kind of always want to be working on something or kind of a kinetic energy kind of a thing?
I always love the idea of feeling like I am serving a purpose, even if it's through food. I mean, I don't care. Like I just love the feeling of always contributing to something that is connected to my heart. Like I love every project I've done, I love each one of them. Every character I've done, I love each one of them. My podcast, my cooking show, like everything has it's connected to my heart and my my integrity. It's all very emotionally connected. And that was a moment to explore that part of me through cooking. I didn't know I had it in me. I thought I'd be like, oh, but all of a sudden it was possible and I did it. And
well, imagine COVID not being able to, I was just thinking about this just now, like COVID, but what if we were not as connected as we could be with phones, internet, whatever. Imagine how isolating that would have been without all that.
You absolutely.
Know, now I'm just tired of social media at some level. You know, I'm like, it's cool, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, starting to enjoy my non-screen time, you know? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yes. No, it does make perfect sense. And I think it's gone so far, such an extreme, this whole social media, that now we have to connect with humans too.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, it's like have conversations, like even conversations with you, Mark, it's like talking about things like that are so important, that it's not just scrolling down.
Oh, being connected is so essential. And that's why I love Gen Z, is I keep reading these things about how they are sort of disconnecting a little bit from the digital, the idea of being able to date in person as opposed to trying to find someone. They like the IRL thing, you know? And you know, my oldest daughter is 23 and I know their generation, I think I think they grew up with it being there. So maybe they're kind of starting to look, okay, well, what else is out there? You know, so hopefully Gen Z will save us. Fingers crossed. But
fingers crossed to the future.
Yeah. So do you have any little ones or any kids?
I do. I have a son. My son is actually 24.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe? Yeah. Most of my life, all I've done is raise a child, just one boy, and seeing him grow and be he actually graduated in Austin college and during the pandemic, which was
he went to UT.
He went to St. Edward's University.
Oh, St. Edward's. Oh, okay.
You know St. Ed's?
Yeah, I think the Dallas Cowboys used to train there many years ago. That was like their training thing. Yeah, for a long time ago.
I didn't know that.
back when they were
yeah.
good.
Yeah. St. Ed's was a really great school, like, to go, you know, because it's such a small school in comparison to UT. You know, UT is like 50,000 kids. St. Ed's is like 4,000. So they went back to school earlier than the norm because it's like 7 kids per classroom. And it was a very good way to not lose the experience of college or education when they need it the most during the pandemic, you know. So, yeah. So my son loves Cuban food, loves the culture. He ate a lot of Cuban food during the pandemic.
Oh, he hit the jackpot, man. He was not in a chicken finger or, you know, chicken nugget household.
No.
The question is, has he embraced the actual cooking? Is this something that, you know, he can go into the kitchen and make things happen?
Loves it. Oh my God. The thing is that, you know, where I come from, we don't have anything frozen when it comes to food. First of all, it's so hot. Nothing stays frozen for a long time. So I grew up just eating fresh food every day. My mom would cook it every day. So that's what I did when he was growing up. I would just cook every day, like fresh, because that's how I grew up. So he is very used to being in the kitchen.
He probably has a really good palate for what's good, I think.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I was with my kids. I always try to like keep the processed stuff out of the house. Occasionally an Oreo would slide into the pantry, but you know.
We can't help the Oreos.
Yeah. Or, you know, we would always shop at Whole Foods, you know, so we'd go in there. They enjoyed the, you know, so shopping is something that you got used to, you know, and then the cooking. So now it's like my daughter the other day, she just kind of conjured up an idea with fajitas. Was it fajita? No. Yeah. Oh, no. Chicken tacos. That's what we worked on. And she just kind of came up with this idea and just like ran with it. And like, she basically cooked the dinner and the dessert. So I was like, hey, got to get her to do that more often, you know.
Yes, but that's because they grew up being used to seeing food being cooked in front.
They're
not afraid of the process. Like, if you look at old pictures from like, I'm saying old pictures because they're not like 10, you know, 10 years old. But pictures in the 80s, 90s. Every picture of a mother is in the kitchen. Like they're all with aprons, you know, hot, just because they cook for the family. Nothing was pre-cooked. So it really transformed the way we think. Like, you know, when you open a door, it's just food and anything. It's just feels somebody's cooking.
There was that thing in America, the Gen X kids. I think there was a hammock of time in the 80s when kids were left kind of to their own devices and they were like the frozen dinners and stuff like that. And that's like, you know,
the parents were working.
Yeah. So that was, I don't know, maybe that was kind of the reason why, you know, the whole family dinners thing was not a big thing in my house. And I really wanted to do that. So I had this thing with the kids. We always try to eat at the table together, you know, as opposed to going many different directions. But does your son kind of take your cue in terms of theatrical work, or is he doing something totally unrelated to what his mom does?
He graduated from accounting and finance. Oh. He loves numbers, but he loves the arts. Like he actually now tells me that he's so thankful that I took him to so many ballet classes and ballet, you know, theater and museums. Like, I always feel like no matter what you do in life, having a connection with the arts, having an appreciation and a taste for, you know, anything else surrounding you when it comes to music or anything, it's so important.
It's also the people who do the art that make kind of, it's more interesting to kind of, they're a wonderful tribe of weirdos and you realize you're one of them. You know, it's nice to, you know, especially when you're watching the news and you see politics, you know, I've kind of noticed I'm kind of trying to go on a news diet and, you know, I'm kind of a little bit.
I love that news diet. Is that a thing? Please.
Well, I'm making it a thing, but I'm kind of wired into the kind of the arts scene down here on the island. Cause I kind of like, as a kid say, IRL, just trying to, you know, interact with some folks, you know, and get to spend some time with some artists. And it's really cool because when you're on that same frequency, you're creative, you know, you're in a different zone, a different genre, a different medium, if you will. But that's the same thing with dance for you, you know, cause the dance is performance.
Theater, life. It's an energy that you're receiving in a dark place, like, or in an outdoor place. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, there's a beautiful saying in Cuba that says, talking about food, food nurtures your body, but the arts nurtures your soul. Mm-hmm. And you need both to to learn, to grow, to feel, to be connected. And food, you know, you eat food together and you can enjoy the arts together, but they're both are nurturing you.
You ever make it down here? Have you been down to this part of the coast?
I do want to go. Everybody tells me, you want to go to the beach, you go to South Padre Island. I do want to go. But Mark, I wanted to tell you that if you ever come to Austin, do you like jazz? I mean, being from New Orleans.
I'm originally from Dallas, so I always clarify, but I spent 20 years there. I spent 20 years there. So I do have I've always had kind of an affinity for jazz and the derivative, you know, like what it kind of blues and things that sort of spawned. Yeah.
Yes. So in Austin, there's this beautiful place called the Elephant Room. And it's like a place that you go on the ground and it's jazz, it's full jazz. And the reason why it's called the Elephant Room is because they found mammal bones in there.
Really?
Like, whoa. Yeah. I'm like, jazz, mammal, whoa. But check out the Elephant Room. And there's so many jazz places here. But it's that energy of like live.
There is something to be said for, you know, for that. I remember one time I was back in 2001-ish or so, the Neville Brothers were playing at Jazz Fest in New Orleans. And I was, for one reason or another, I was able to be I was on the stage, but just off to the side. I was kind of hanging out, kind of watching, you know, these guys do their thing when it's right up on, you know, you're right up on it. There's an energy. And I just remember this, and this dude was next to me. He's wearing like army fatigues and he was grooving. I mean, like, people can't see me now, pretend like I'm dancing, grooving or whatever. And he had this little like earring, had like a little fish on it. One of those little articulated, in Asia, they're like these little metal it's like a little fish is what it was. We kind of chatted and I wasn't really dialing in, sunglasses, hat on. It's Lawrence Fishburne. He was standing next to me. He's getting all, so I'm like hanging out, watching Neville Brothers on the side stage, standing next to Lawrence Fishburne. I'm like, this is one of the coolest things. I got to tell this story. I haven't told that story hardly ever, but now I'm telling you and the folks listening.
That is incredible.
It is, as far as career stuff and the things you've done, what haven't you done? Is there something you're like, I really want to do this. This is on my bucket list to work with a person or a director or a genre or a type of a story. I mean, what is still kind of itching, making you think, I want to do this thing?
You know, every time I get this question, because it comes out often in terms of like, what is the one thing you haven't done or you want to do? And I really never know how to answer it, because it's like every time you get into a job, everything that I'm about to do, I've never done before.
Uh-huh.
So it's always like, oh, how are we going to get through this? Like, because it's usually a new location or it's usually it's a new world, new filmmakers, new artists, new actors. And everybody has this idea of what this vision that we're doing is. And it's like, it never gets old for me. I don't know what I want to do next. All I know is that I'm going to have fun because that's what's been happening.
So just kind of like to throw yourself into, you know, whatever's coming at you is, you know, always just say yes.
I always say yes. I always say yes. I mean, I get scared. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, because I don't have all the answers, but I'm used to that feeling.
Well, doggone, I was hoping you did, because I mean, like, I got some questions, you know. It'd be nice if somebody had all the answers, because the older I get, the less I think I know, you know, which is just a weird
thing. Oh, my God. No idea. I mean, right? You just don't know. So to even have something in my mind that I want to do, there's so much I don't know that I don't want to just even put a barrier into, like, I want to do this. I don't know. I really don't know.
how did MIA come to you? Was that something that somebody reached out and said, hey, we got a thing that we're doing and we think you're great for it? Or did you do the audition process?
I did the whole audition process. And I'll tell you, when I finished Fear the Walking Dead, I was in a very delicate place, because then where it's like finding your next home, like, where am I doing next after seven
seasons? You've had that ability to develop a sense of home. You know, that's where a lot of people don't. They go work on a project, a few months are done. You're there, you know, developing relationships and
Seasons of like almost 100 episodes of television of Fear. So like, I know these people really well. So now when you finish that and you wrap it and it's done, then what's next? That place was like, where am I going? And I could not think of like where I see myself. I'm like, I'm just putting out everything for the best. I don't know where, but I will be ready. Mm-hmm. So when MIA came, I got a call and they said, you know, they would like you to audition for this. And this is a beautiful project. And it's Bill Dubuque's next show, which is the creator of Ozark. Uh-huh. And now Ozark has been one of my time's favorite during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Yeah. It became huge during the pandemic. And I do remember saying, if I ever would do a show after Fear, I want something with this grit, like this depth and this beautiful art, character arc. I remember feeling so inspired by the actors, the whole deal, the whole package. Loved it. So when they said, "Is the creator of Ozark," I'm like, I literally was like, what? I felt like somebody was calling from, you know, above in the sky. Yeah. And I, you know, since COVID, we've been putting ourselves on tape and send it to audition, right? It's called self-tapes. But this time I called my rep and I said, hey, would they be open to do in-person audition?
Yeah.
And they were like, let me call you back. Talking about in-person, right? Talking
about people I've spoken with who have actually said that they want to get back to, you know, in-person because during COVID, gosh, the tape thing was the jam of what everybody just kind of went to.
So it stays doing self-tape. They don't do in-persons anymore. Mm-hmm. So my rep said, hey, they're willing to do an in-person. And I just flew myself to LA. I rented an Airbnb close to the casting director's office. I walked and I literally, it was March last year. It was so hot already. And I studied during the, you know, the whole trip. The night before and the day of the audition, I went in person for the first time since COVID before. And I had an hour and 45 minutes audition.
Wow.
It was 1 hour and 45 minutes. I remember my agents were calling. Are you okay? Are you still there? What's going on?
Usually since you're maybe 5 minutes at best, you know.
At best. Yeah. Like 30 when you're talking about a role, but yeah. It was such an exercise of in all levels. Like I was just going with the flow, whatever they want me to do. I was so hungry for this in-person experience that time went by for me so quickly until I left the room and I realized I was hungry. I was hot. I was thirsty. My whole body was like, wow.
Because you're dialed in on a whole different frequency. But I know this is supposed to take place in Miami. Do they shoot it in Miami or do they?
The whole thing was shot in Florida, in Miami. In Miami.
Where your a lot of your people are there, you know. So,
talking about Cuban food and Cuban cafecito halfway, like, okay, at 2 p.m., there was a craft lady that would come with like little shots of cafe.
Oh, y'all don't play when it comes to coffee. That stuff will light you up.
Oh my God. Everybody was going downhill 2 p.m. They will have a shot and it'd be like, whoop. It's like, okay. So that's what happens in Florida. I only lived that in Florida. And in Miami was, what a treat. I mean, it's called MIA and it's Miami. Mm-hmm. So happy we shot the whole thing in Miami because it's really a character. Miami is its own character.
Did you work with Billy Burke at all? Or I don't know if he was just in an episode or two.
No, we didn't work together.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the storylines are not, I'm not in, you know, connect.
Yeah, because he's cool dude. I just kind of saw him and Edward James Olmos, who was just super cool guy.
Oh, I worked with him. I mean, when he came to set, it was like iconic. I mean, Miami Vice. I mean, we're talking what made Miami.
Oh, yeah. Because he's just so talented and he really commands a presence. So you had a chance to act with him. How amazing is that?
He came to set and the whole crew. Everybody, he came and we really felt that he blessed us, like, because it's Miami. He started so many iconic shows and he was in the first episode. He's actually in the trailer. He's so iconic. I mean, when you just know you're in the presence of someone on a frequency that is just so above.
How cool is that? And I love all, the Latin actors, I'm a big fan. I mean, like living here is so wonderful because I get to use all my poorly crafted Spanish. All my kids did a Spanish immersion growing up and, in school. And my oldest can speak it and understand it very well. I know my youngest understands it. She just is, wonky about wanting to speak it. But it's so funny because when they correct me on Spanish, it's like, I speak Texas Spanish, kind of like, hey, I do the best I can. I try the more tequila I have. I don't drink tequila, but whenever I did in my younger days, I thought my Spanish was so pristine,
Because you relax, you relax and you don't overthink twice. Okay. Like when you drink anything, you just like cerveza, baño, like you become so
The two of those, are entered, used in the same evening frequently. Yes. But
cerveza and baño.
One of the things I always do towards the end of my chats is something I call my 7 questions, which is a little extra fun. And we've talked food, but I always ask the first question, which is one of my favorites, which is, what is your favorite comfort food? That thing you love that which you've had a bad day, it elevates your mood. Having a great day, it just kind of adds to it. What would that comfort food be for you?
I love tostones, which is the fried plantains.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not healthy, but it's like,
oh
God, this changes my mood. I'm like, I'm not tired anymore.
Well, there is a place here on the island that serves ceviche, and then they have fried, they do a long slice of the tostone. Instead of a chip, that's so good.
That anything with tostones, it changes my mood. Anything, fish, meat, anything. It's, even by itself, it's just great.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I think it's more of a Puerto Rican thing, but mofongo?
Mofongo? In the show? Oh, mofongo is amazing. It's Caribbean.
The next question. Now, if we're going to sit down, we're going to have one of those little, what do you call it, cafecito? Is that what they call the small? Okay, maybe big coffees, because this is going to be a nice long afternoon sitting down at a table with 3 people. Living or not, who would those 3 people be you would like to sit down with for hours and just have a great conversation?
Oh my gosh. Well, one of my great friends that I just talked, Ruben Blades. Mm-hmm. He plays Salazar on Fear the Walking Dead. He's an iconic actor, a great musician. He's won every Grammy out there possible. Ruben Blades.
Really?
Oh my God. He's like 25 Grammys. It's ridiculous. He's an attorney, graduated from Harvard. He's from Panama. He ran for president of Panama. I mean, talking to Ruben even without cafecito, it's such a joy. Somebody that I would love to talk to join that conversation. Just because I had in my mind for the past couple of days, do you know this novel called 100 Years of Solitude?
I've heard of it. I can't say I know too much about it.
Okay, yeah. His name is Gabriel Garcia Marquez. He's one of the most iconic writers in Latin America. 100 Years of Solitude, Love in the Times of Cholera. Like he's.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah. He's an icon. So I'd love to talk to him. You say another person?
Yeah,
third person.
Yeah, 3 people. Uh huh.
Gosh, could it be a character?
Yes, sure.
I don't know. Does it have to be fictional? Could it be fictional?
Sure, because nobody's done that. But yeah, I like that. That would be very interesting. What would a fictional character be like in that? Because it's not just talking with you; it's talking amongst the 3 of them talking amongst each other.
Like somebody that we could talk to, like just the 3 of us. Because I feel like it should be a girl, because we would laugh so hard. I don't know. Gosh, that's a good question, Mark. Well, I feel like I'm having a great time talking to you.
Likewise. No,
join that conversation with coffee. I think you could join any conversation with coffee and without, and with tostones.
That would be wonderful. What's that thing they do in Mexico? They take the coffee, the Mexican coffee, and the churros, and they dip it in the chocolate. Oh no, it's hot chocolate. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. you are my third person, Mark, just because I've been having a great time.
Well, you know what? That's the first time anybody said that, and I'm going to put a gold star somewhere in my studio here.
And that's a lot for someone that I've never met before. It's not like we've known each other, but I feel like...
Well, you and your son got to come down to Padre. We'll have the tostones and the ceviche and watch the sunset over the Laguna Madre.
And the margaritas.
Margaritas. Like at least 1 or 20, you know. So
just 1 or 2. You start with one, or cerveza, you know?
That would be
you
wonderful.
You know how to say cerveza and baño, so, you know.
Well, they do something down here. When I came down years ago, they said, do you want a dress? I said, dressed? What do you mean? They take tajin and they put it on the bottle, you know, so you can lick a little tajin. Not salt, but it's, you know, I like yes. My Modelo's dressed. So now the next question I got for you, if you, you know, could go back when you were younger, who was your celebrity crush when you were a young Danai?
Oh my God, Brad Pitt. Are you kidding?
Oh, of course.
I watched Meeting Joe Black. I was like, I think I was 12.
Oh,
like,
my God. That was, wow. Yeah, that was great. That was with Anthony Hopkins also was in that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I remember I did not speak English then, but I felt like I understood him.
You don't need to speak.
I don't know what you said, but yes. I get it.
He's not human. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that guy. There's something a little off.
The scenes with Anthony Hopkins. Oh my God. Yeah, they were together. It was just magical. It was Anthony's like, whoa.
Yeah. And the thing about Brad Pitt, I think is he's very talented, but I think his looks get in the way. Sometimes you're just kind of like, yeah, that guy's just too pretty, you know? And then now if you're going to be forced to live on an island, not forced, but it's a beautiful exotic island. Somebody's like, you got to be there for an entire year. It's beautiful. You want to be there, but no streaming. So if you want to listen to music, you got to bring one CD or a box set. And if you want to watch a movie, you're allowed to bring one DVD. What would that CD and what would that DVD be for you?
Gosh, I thought of Celia Cruz. I think I would listen to salsa because if I'm by myself, it needs to be musical and fun.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Celia Cruz would be.
Like, so you're looking at it not just listening, you're looking at it as a dancing kind of a thing.
I cannot be sad. It can't be something I can't sing or like lyrics. It needs to have lyrics and it needs to be like movement.
Uh-huh.
So definitely any salsa, Celia Cruz would be ideal. Like Carnaval, Life is a Carnival. That's an amazing thing to be stuck in an island with.
Oh, yeah.
And gosh. You know, I love 007 movies, like the classics. I would take a few 007 movies and just watch James Bond just kick ass and Sean Connery.
That would be a great box set. And I got to say, next to Sean Connery, I got to say Daniel Craig was my favorite Bond.
Daniel Craig was epic. Casino Royale, right?
Daniel Craig's era was more, not gritty, it was more real. You know, it was more like,
you understood his pain and his charm and the whole orphan thing, how he turned around and made it like just posh and fun.
Oh yeah, that last film though, that was the perfect way to wrap his, you know.
Yeah, arc. His journey. I think I would get Daniel Craig's like trilogy, or I don't know how many he did. Like four, he did four.
I'm not sure. That sounds about right.
So any 007 like trilogy, yeah, just chunk. It's just because it's beautiful, fun, beautiful. You know, it's just good stories, and you get to travel.
Yeah, you get to. I always liked James Bond because you went places. It was a journey. Kind of same thing like about Indiana Jones. There was a journey he went on. You know.
I love Indiana Jones too.
So the next question I got, if you were to say from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, if you look at the ingredients of a perfect day for you, what would the recipe for a perfect day be from the time you get up to the time you go to bed?
I love to read. So definitely would like to spend 30 minutes reading a good book. I love reading. I love eating. So definitely I will cook something delicious for me. I love my dog, so I love giving him a walk or just have some quality of time.
What kind of dog?
I have an Aussie Doodle, Australian Shepherd and Poodle.
There's a lot going on there. Okay.
It's a pandemic dog. You know, he came during the pandemic. I'm like, he lit up my day. I love cooking something, reading, spending time, just a nice walk in nature. Gosh, if I'm working, definitely go to set. Mm-hmm. I love people. I love being part of a community. I love when you go in and just deliver something special and give people hugs goodbye and see you next time. It's just such a good feeling to be around people and then read a good book after that, right?
Exactly. I like to think about the dog because the dogs, they start and they complete our day. You know, if you have a dog.
They do.
Yeah, my dog has this. I have a 2-year-old golden retriever who's got his own routine. He'll wait for me to brush my teeth, and then when I'm done getting ready, he'll then jump up in bed. You know, and he sits there and watches me, making sure I don't know what he's watching, but he sits there and I guess brushing your teeth looks a little weird to a dog. I don't know, but he'll sit there and watch.
They don't get that far.
He's an adolescent. You know, he's a very honorable. But the next question, hey, if somebody said, Danai, you can't do this anymore, you know, acting, this creative thing that you're used to is not available to you anymore, what would be the other vocation, other job that you would love to do besides acting?
I would love, if I couldn't do it, I would still would love to be attached to it. So I think I would teach it. I would love to be around children. Introduce them the power of the arts. I think I will just go to the beginning of humanity. How can I instill that? I think it's so important because it's a way to also feel connected.
I was just about to say it's a connection. It's connected. When you realize that somebody else is, that's, I think, where this medium, you know, podcasting, I mean, I think it gives people opportunity to go, oh, you know, I'm not the only one who feels or thinks or reacts or, you know, whatever the way, you know, other people do, other people are the same, you know? And so do you think we're getting like in an isolated world kind of, you know, the digital thing is kind of bred, especially COVID just poured gasoline on the fire, but where people are kind of isolated in their own space, you know, in their own head in a way, you know? So yeah, I think acting is a great thing to learn because it kind of forces you to listen, right? You know, so there you go. You could be an acting teacher. So that would be choice number two. So the last question though I got is, if you were to jump into a DeLorean, it took you back in time to when you were 16 years old and you got a piece of advice, you got a couple minutes to spend with yourself. You have a piece of advice to 16-year-old you to make that moment in your life maybe a little bit better or to put yourself on a little different trajectory. But what would that advice be for you?
Gosh, you see, I don't regret anything that has happened to me. So I think what I would have told myself, younger self, is trust the process and have fun. Trust it. Mm-hmm. I did anyway, but it would have been nice to know.
To know that you were making the decision that works. Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, there's a time that you have no choice but to trust it. You're like, I already said yes. So what am I going to do with my yes is up to me. I'm going to trust that, what I say yes to. But hearing that, knowing that at 16, like, hey, what's about to happen, trust it. The good, the bad, the rejection, the love, the yes and the no's, trust it. It's going to be better in the long run. And I mean, it happened that way, but it would have been really nice.
No, that's
really nice.
It certainly sounds like it worked out wonderfully. I mean, you ended up in Austin. I mean, come on, you did well.
Trust the process. Yeah. And I love it here. I love Austin. It's a great place to reconnect.
Well, hey, if you ever head south, you know, send up a flare, say I'm heading that way. We'll have some, you know, tostones and, you know, the good stuff, you know. But
bet on it, Mark.
Well, Danai, I so appreciate you sharing your time with me today. It's been more than a pleasure and really enjoyed just spending some time with you. And, you know, it's your MIA
really
is going to be
fun.
Well, MIA, is it on NBC or NBC and Peacock or so, just Peacock? You know, it's.
It starts on Peacock May 7th, but it will be aired on NBC May 14th. And that it will be weekly. What I can tell you from the show is that this is one of the experiences that I had the most fun. Like in every shape or form, I think you're going to enjoy it.
And you used to hang out with zombies during a pandemic, so I trust your assessment here. You know, if you say it's fun, I'm going to trust you. Plus, James Olmos, and you know, can't beat that. But you know, I'm going to go grab some lunch now because you've made me way too hungry right now.
Thank you, Mark.
There you go, Danai Garcia. She is so much fun. I enjoy this conversation so much. The new show, don't forget, it is called MIA. It is on NBC and Peacock. And don't forget to check out her podcast. Where do you find that? Just go to storyandcraftpod.com. Everything about, of course, Danai, as well as all of our past guests. Also go to Substack. Just go to storyandcraft.substack.com. And don't forget to like Story and Craft on your favorite podcast app. We're on all of them. And follow the show. You get notified every time a new episode comes out. Leave a comment, the thumbs up, ring the bell. Do all the jazz on every one of the platforms. Why not? Let help people to find the show. And of course, great episodes to come. In fact, if you're a big fan of all things Taylor Sheridan, the Taylor Sheridan universe, the new show, Dutton Ranch, you probably know it's coming out. I'm not going to say whether I have or have not seen the first few episodes, but I'm just going to say it's a great show. That's all I'm going to say. And one of the fine actors in Dutton Ranch going to be coming up here in just a few weeks. All right, so hey, do me a favor. You have yourself a wonderful rest of your day. And as I always say, thank you very, very much for making what I got going on here part of whatever you've got going on. It means a lot. So you have a good one. Be safe, and we will see you next time right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story.
Did you know that Cary Grant would send a bill to house guests that overstayed their welcome? Did you know that Flo Ziegfeld used to wash Billy Burke's hair with expensive champagne? Or that Jean Harlow was only 26 years old when she died? How about Frank Sinatra being banned from Marilyn Monroe's funeral? Stars of the Golden Age is a podcast that dives deep into the lives of your favorite old Hollywood stars, where you can learn interesting things like this and so much more. My name is Erin Carlson, and each week I will take you on a journey through another life of one of Hollywood's greats. I focus on the stars' early lives and subsequent lives behind the scenes. Learn about Vivian Leigh, Humphrey Bogart, Grace Kelly, Jane Mansfield, James Dean, Katharine Hepburn, Olivia de Havilland, the wild, wild life of Errol Flynn, and so many more. Together, we can learn about these stars, what made them tick, and how events in their early lives affected them as adults. Find Stars of the Golden Age on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.